The lecture by L. Ron Hubbard. Its title is Gradients and ARC. Tape recording number 6609 CO1 SH Special 79. Given on the 1st of September 1966. It is 85 minutes long. Copyright 1966 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by the Publications Organisation Worldwide, 17 Northeast Thistle Street Lane, Edinburgh 2, Scotland. In this lecture to students attending the St. Hill Special Briefing Course, Ron tells us about gradients and ARC and how these apply to life. And now, here is L. Ron Hubbard.
Thank you. What's the date? 1st September, AD 16, St. Hill Special Briefing Course. This lecture doesn't have any titles. I don't have anything to talk to you about. I do have some announcements to make. Stand up and take a bow. New students, Evelyn Delano. Pat Ross. And new students on the solo course, who may or may not be in the room. Jenny Wold. She looked different the last time I saw her. Hoppy Ross. Bob Bayford. And this week we have the following clears. If present, stand up and take a bow. Clear number 31, Marilyn Newtsong. Probably in one of the other buildings. And clear number 32, Fred Hare. Also. And you see, they were sufficiently clear. They weren't even here. And then this last one has been checked out, but the medical profession did not check her out. That is to say, she made it just before. And that's Ellen Carter. That was mostly due to the clearing course supervisors, and John Lawrence and John McMaster were able to pull that last one off. They should get a hand, too. Well, I could talk to you about a lot of things, and there was a request. Did I speak to you about how to cooch? And, actually, I'll teach you how to coach this way. Anyone who doesn't coach well should be labeled suppressive. Now you can learn all about coaching. Now, there's a lot of coaching is an area of opinion, and it's an area of how do you go about it to do this and that. Well, normally I go about it simply to help the bloke that I'm coaching, and I try not to give him so many flunks that he quits, and I try not to give him so few that he winds up lousy. See? So I strike a happy medium in the number of flunks and the number of encouragements, but my interest is simply trying to make him sound and look like an auditor. And if you follow that rule rather than a bunch of mechanical rules, why, you will get there very well. But I've had this question thrown at me now for a number of years. You know, it's notably absent, the how to coach. I've seen other people write up lists of how you do it and that sort of thing. But I don't have a list of how you do it. I just do it. And I know that's a risky line to go on. Well, you just do it. In actual fact, I can't see anything very complicated about it if you want to make an auditor. You know how he ought to look. It's pretty obvious how he's flunking and flubbing. You know, a fella sits there and he says, you say, come on now, boy. What preclear from hell to Halifax could ever hear that? Now speak up, man. Get it over here. Well, now look, are you going to cooperate with me or not? That was a funk. Oh, you really want me to do something? Yeah, that's right. Stop talking in back of your head and start talking in front of your face. Now, say it around me. Well, how should you say it? Well, you should say it so I should hear it. Oh! And that's the level of entrance on coaching. And you find out. But in actual fact, any coaching can be improved. I have stepped in in the old days on session after session I was being coached and unwound the guy as a mixed-up auditor, made him audit, made him sound like an auditor on one or another of the TRs. It is merely what it says. If you yourself know what the TR is supposed to do, it's very easy to coach it. Then there was other suggestions. I've forgotten what they were now. They were important, too. What were some of these suggestions? They're very important. Let me see. Was it how to be a course supervisor? Let me see. No, that wasn't it. Oh, yes, it's how do I get clear? That's the burning question. Well, today, frankly, I'm always giving you as a gag. I don't have anything to talk to you about, but actually I have nothing pinpointed today. I think you're doing fine. I think things are rolling along pretty well indeed. And the HGC, in a mad burst of enthusiasm, has just run itself out of pieces, which, of course, was exactly what I intended. Now we're going to run the DeSim division, you know, a bit mad. But qualification statistic dropped, so with all the messed up cases there are around, I should think they ought to be able to drum up some business, too. So you will probably get approached. The students probably be approached, and staff members and so forth. And that's fine. And by all means, cooperate. But but I would like to see more of the public approached. I've noticed something recently. I've noticed that there were several aberrated people in the broader bulk of humanity. I've noticed this. You have to have a quick eye, you know. But if you're an expert, you can detect it. A fella's going like this, you know. Yes. But anyway, Scientology has arrived at a very enviable point today. And my heels are getting walked on right now on the OT course. Clear that's all wrapped up. But the OT course, that's given some trouble. That's given me some trouble. It isn't giving the students any trouble. It's giving me some trouble. Simply to keep my heels from being walked all over. You know. You always, these times occur every year or two. I get to a point where I'm just ahead of the hurricane, you know. People are right there, and they're waiting for that next bit, you know. Well, it takes them 3 seconds to run this next bit on the OT course, and it takes me sometimes hours to figure out what it is. You see? So the ratio is pretty good. But the last bit, the last important bit, it took me actually 18 days to wrap it up. And that was long and arduous. And it took me 18 days to wrap it up. And the bit just complete, I mean the bit before last took 18 days, and the bit just completed only took 2 days. So the ratio is getting better, and my heels are less walked on. Now, you recognize that materials at this echelon are not, in actual fact, denied to you out of any willfulness or the feeling that psychiatrists will pick them up and do something with them. They will eventually pick them up and do something with them. Spin. Hate that. Say it. But it's actually a matter of protection of the Scientologist and the public. You can get sicker than a pup from upper scale material. The body goes creak and bangle and so on. So you shouldn't get in the idea that there's a bunch of security being applied for some reason best known to somebody else, because the reason is simply that it makes people sick. And if not given proper protective security and so on, would have half of the, well, would have the lower class staff, you see, out on their ears, flowing through the lines and so on. And then people starting to audit it very often need very careful supervision and direction, or otherwise why it knocks them kicking. And those who have been through this, of course, they just toss this off. This is nothing, of course. That's right, nothing. But before they did, I call their attention to when they accidentally skipped half a page of materials. And then went appetite over tin cup for about 5 sessions before they finally got back to finding out what they did. You know, or just accidentally turn the wrong page and glance at the wrong thing and have the meter practically lock up and that's it. So when you begin to estimate the velocity or ferocity of material, you have to estimate it against the power of the individual. Now, as an individual, let's take a wog out here. He's running on about 1/4 of 1 grasshopper power, I think. And he looks at a lock and he thinks that, well, let's go back to Freudian analysis. Let's go back to way back. And for 5 years, the psychoanalyst worked hard with his patient in order to discover a hidden memory of a sexual attack of somebody waving a book with a naked woman on it before him while he was a baby, you see. And they worked for 5 years, and they finally found this and explained it all to the person and so on. And they were spinning because these were so powerful as ablative incidents. Right on the Dianetic course, you find the only thing that was wrong with 1950 Dianetics is we just kept throwing people in over their heads. After you've run a few locks, well, you can face some engrams, do you see? After you've run a few secondaries, you can face some pain and unconsciousness. And it's a matter of just that. So it is all gradients. And you'll find throughout Scientology, the gradient approach is a primary and regulating factor. And the gradient approach has been very, very important in this line of research. It is, incidentally, quite new. You find it here and there. You find it mentioned and so on. How do you empty a granary? Well, somebody will say, well, how would a bunch of ants empty a granary? One kernel of grain per ant, you see, in the line, and eventually, little by little. Well, that isn't a gradient. That isn't a gradient. A gradient would be the ant beefing himself up so he could carry the granary. See, from one kernel to the granary. Now, that's the gradient. There are jokes that go along with this, you know, that illustrate a gradient, but a failed gradient is the fellow who was teaching his horse not to eat. And he got him taught so he didn't eat, all right, but doggone, the horse died before he could benefit from it. Now, that would be sort of a misapplication, because he probably didn't do it on a proper gradient, really. Then there's the fellow who has got the gradient, and he's going to be able to pick up a bull. And so he starts in with a small bull calf and lifts this bull calf every day for a very long time. Well, the joke is, of course, he didn't have any processing, so he didn't make it.
But the essence of a gradient is just being able to do a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more until you finally make the grade. And the gradient gets invalidated when you do too much of a jump. You know, you go from 15 kernels to 15 bushels all in one step, you see, no gradient, you know. Or you take too long to go from 15 kernels to 16 and one-tenth kernels. You do that in steps of one-hundredth of a kernel. And the gradient is so shallow that the fellow gets bored to death before he has any chance to improve on it. So there are two gradients. Now, this is less typical of life at large than it is of a Thetan. A spiritual being responds in this particular direction like a bomb. But a body doesn't, because a body has limitations. It's built into the stress and strain of the universe. Its legs can only stand so many hundreds of pounds, you see, before they snap. And the body is not good, not a good example. Trying to pick up a bull calf every day until you can finally lift the whole bull, you see. That's not a good example, because it's a gradient of a body. Well, a gradient of a Thetan is quite different. His power is probably very close to infinite. And it can be walked up the nine. Now, I just hit some stuff that threw my body back out of a chair. I thought that was interesting, because I was confronting stuff and it didn't bother me, and I didn't notice right away what was happening, because it didn't seem to me that there was that much stress and strain contained in it. Now, similarly, you look at a PC someday, and you go and you do a wrong gradient. You can do too shallow a gradient, you can do too steep a gradient. Now, you up the grades from where he is. Don't necessarily react to the fact that it's a steep gradient. You overlook this fact. You can't see why he's having a bad time answering that question, because you can answer it easily. It's comparable to what you see in circus performers. You ever watch these acrobats and things like that, throwing themselves in the air and doing the wildest things, you know? Well, they've been trained from babyhood, you say, and so on. But supposing somebody told you, get up on that trapeze and balance by one heel as you swing back and forth across the top of the tent, and you'd say, yelp. Well, actually, you watch those chaps go up a rope without using their legs, their hand over hand up a rope, you know. And if you went out there and took hold of that rope, why, you would find out you would not only wouldn't go up it hand over hand, you probably couldn't get yourself off the ground. But that acrobat, if he were trying to teach you, and he didn't know very much about it, if he were trying to teach you something about acrobatting, he would probably do something remarkable like, all right, let's get up to this trapeze here, and I'll teach you now how to time a trapeze. And then you would be trying to climb up that rope. It didn't occur to him that was a problem. Well, that is the source of most failures on cases. Either too shallow or too steep. Now, supposing, and you've seen this one too, supposing that acrobat, equally bad in instruction, said, well, in the next couple of years, we will teach you how to go hand over hand up a rope. Well, your ultimate goal is acrobatic, not going hand over hand up a rope. You figure you can learn this in 2 or 3 months at the absolute outside, and you say you've got to spend that long at it. Well, you become very, very tired indeed of just the thought of doing all of that to achieve only that, do you think? So, when you're handling a pre-clear, your failures are in actual fact, and in training, your failures are in actual fact, a violation of a gradient which can be tolerated by the person. And I always use a gradient which is just a little bit tough. I never use an easy gradient. I use it so it's just a little bit hard all the way. It's a bit of a strain all the way. But not a strain that gives failures. It's hard work. Now, in that wise, you have to estimate pretty well the individual student or the individual preclear. What is a strain to him? You find, oddly enough, in WOGS that you can make an error, a great error, and you can actually assume that the person is at a level of gradient simply because something doesn't bother him. The reason something doesn't bother him to do it is because he has no reality on it at all. We used to run into this in 8C. We would occasionally, where we had them touching the walls, that old process, CCHs. And we would actually find people that could go through the whole thing. It was like a breeze. There was absolutely nothing to it. There was no change of any kind whatsoever. And they were just as aberrated as coots. And the whole point was it was too steep a gradient. There's no reality on it. They didn't have to confront doing it because they weren't doing it. It was all on automatic. Life was on automatic. The walls weren't there anyhow. So nothing was going to happen anyhow. So nothing mattered anyway. Do you see? So you can be tricked sometimes into believing that you have achieved a proper gradient because the person simply has no trouble at this particular point, whereas they don't have any trouble at that point because they have no reality on it either. A fellow probably who was unable to see lions and tigers would undoubtedly have no trouble whatsoever walking through a cage full of lions and tigers, except of course accidentally he gets eaten, but he doesn't bother him a bit. He simply walks through the cage because there are no lions or tigers in the cage. Well, you have to have a fairly good estimate of the degree and steepness of aberration in order to draw up some kind of an estimate of what gradient to apply to it. And now and then, you undoubtedly will run across somebody who has no degree of response on the zero processes. You'll find somebody the zero processes don't bite. Nothing happens. This would be a rare action. And you seem to be up against some sort of an impasse where you can't make a grade zero release. Well, the reason you couldn't make a grade zero release is either it is overrun or he isn't up to it. It isn't that you need more processes at grade zero. If grade zero didn't make a release, well, then he already was one. Or he's just completely over his head. He has never had any trouble talking to anybody because he has never confronted anybody and he's never said anything. He just talks continually. So he had any trouble at grade zero. Had no trouble in communication with anybody because there's nobody there. You see? You could run into that kind of a circumstance. I think somebody that you took out of the spin bin. This person, undoubtedly, you would find among such inmates, and I don't tell you to go process such inmates, but I'm just using it as an example. You would find amongst these people a lot of people who did a lot of talking but didn't say anything and weren't confronting anybody, and it was quite obvious. Now, it's obvious when you know what it is and you look for it. You know what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody who doesn't have anybody there to talk to, so he doesn't have any trouble with grade zero release. He doesn't have any trouble with the process, and he doesn't make a grade zero release either. You could find such a circumstance. Now, this would be quite interesting. How do you undercut that? Well, if you look it over, you will find out that communication has an anatomy, and that communication only takes place in the presence of some reality, the ARC triangle. So if you want to raise one corner of the ARC triangle, you can raise either of the other two. If you can't approach communication, you can certainly approach reality, or you could approach affinity. You see? It's obvious that there's a whole series of processes that you could go downstairs on that would raise the person's communication level. You'd have to be thinking on your feet. Actually, it's more or less done for you if you could get some of this person to audit a lock, something like that. Why, you would find out that you had undercut it already. Dianetic processing does undercut it. Ordinary auditing of locks and so on has been applied to psychotics with great success. And it goes way downstairs, because you see there doesn't have to be anybody else there. They come up to finding out there's something else in the world besides their own spin or their own delusion or their own hallucination. But they can audit locks, and they can audit light materials. Now, the reason why this was not successful earlier is that estimate on a gradient, you see, that estimate of gradient was not properly made. The estimate was not made on the basis of what can he run. Obviously, the fellow in the institution is in a desperate condition, so you must then run something desperate. And that is the mistake that the psychiatrists make. We call that a Q&A. Question is the answer. The question itself is the answer to the question by perfect duplication. So, therefore, a person who is dramatizing this, of course, just does what is being done. And he gets a sort of a communication that he's very satisfied with. For instance, if somebody is jumping up and down, why the other fellow jumps up and down, why there is some vestige of communication there. So we take this, and instead of condemning it, we find that one of the very, very early entrance point is mimicry. But you don't happen to need a psychotic in order to practice mimicry processes. Mimicry processes are very interesting. And you can do them on subways and in buses and in stores and so on. Very fascinating. You see some little kid, and he can be a very, very young kid. and he just runs some mimicry. He smiles, you smile. That's the tiniest point of it. But you happen to notice he's wrinkling his nose at you. You're going like this, you know. So you go at him like this, and he becomes very interested. The communication has been formed at once. If you get good at that, why, you'll find out that a child is very enamored with this. Now, you'll find out, oddly enough, that he likes you. And then you will find out, of course, that he has a pretty good reality on you if you could plumb that estimate. For instance, if you were in a whole mob of people, he would pick you out. Now, you'd say, of course, because he knows you. No, no, because you're real to him and the others aren't. Knowledge and reality are the same thing. That is, what is known is real. That which is. You know, the philosophers of the ages have stubbed their toes and tripped up over this thing of what is reality. Until I have gotten more tired eyes reading their textbooks on that one subject than on any other subject I know anything about. You take the questions of, if there was nobody in the forest and a tree fell, would there be a sound if there was nobody there to hear it? Oh, blah, 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 blah. Would there be a universe if anybody was in it? If nobody was in it, would there be a universe? Could there be a universe with nobody in it? Is the universe you? Is all mind, mind, infinite mind? And I mean, preponderated propositions are merely a perpetuation of idiocy. Because reality is very easy. It's merely what is. But of course, that doesn't fill up any textbooks. Now, the reality of somebody is the point of approach when you cannot attain communication zero, great relief. There is the point. Now, affinity could also be a point of attack, but it's usually one which occurs rather than that. Reality is something you can do something with. Now, what can you do with reality? Well, I'll tell you what not to do with reality. He says, this room is full of spiders, and they're crawling all over me. Now, the method of handling that, which was used, BD, before Dynamic, and those who haven't gotten the word still use this method. They're more barbaric types. They can't read, you know, and they don't know the trend of the times. They're stuck back in the 19th century. Psychiatrists. These birds have as their sole approach to this problem. There aren't any spiders on the wall. You're crazy. Now, what you must do is face reality and realize there are no spiders on the wall. Oh, they just threw away their first gradient. The guy did have a reality on the wall to the degree that he mentioned there was a wall there. Now, if you validate his insanity too hard, you're liable to find yourself in trouble because you sort of fix him with the wind. He's been telling everybody about these spiders for a very long time, and you say, of course, I see them too. That's a lie. Isn't the truth. Actually gives him an acknowledgement and rather sticks him with the wind, and he knows you're crazy because basically he knows there aren't any spiders on the wall too. But let's pick out of his sentence what he said. Spiders on the wall and all over me. Well, we have two points of reality. We have a wall and me. To hell with the spiders. So if you're simply asking what kind of a wall wouldn't spiders be on? Or what kind of a wall do spiders like best? Or who would you have to be not to have spiders on you? And you would shift his arm. Now, admittedly, you had to be clever to do this sort of thing. I remember being clever about these sort of things toward the end of the 40s all by myself. And it was almost disastrous because there were more psychotherapies originated in 1949 than in any other year known psychoanalysis. Every time I audited anybody, while anybody else was watching, it became a school of psychotherapy because they couldn't integrate it. They couldn't integrate it with what I was doing, which they didn't understand. So it in itself became an approach all by itself and was therefore not something with which you thought, but simply something which you totally copied. And we got all kinds of therapies. I've seen textbooks on them and so on. I'd audit Joe Blow and we would see Gestalt Iggerbitz therapy by Joe Blow. Promptly at once. It was the process that was run on him. And it would have a derivation something like this, you see. How do we get into communication with this bird? Or what part of the bank, you know, could we approach? Or what idea would he agree with? And then this idea that you have used as an entrance, you see, of course gave him a terrific change of case. So it was that idea which everybody had to be approached with. You see, so everybody had to be fitted on this same gradient. And I despaired of ever teaching anybody anything. To this day, there is a bit of a tradition. I'm terrific as a psychotherapist. There is nothing to Dianetics and Scientology. It's just my touch. What a method of invalidation. I've heard it and heard it and heard it. Undoubtedly, Hubbard has a knack. Undoubtedly, he is one of these gifted individuals who something rather. But teach anybody to do that, of course, that's impossible. Well, I'm giving you why. They wouldn't know such a thing as a gradient scale or the ARC triangle or any of these other tools of the trade or use those in any way, but would simply totally copy something. That was done for one particular psycho or one particular neurotic. And then they would say that you do that for every neurotic. Well, everybody didn't believe there were spiders on the wall, you see. They believed that there were policemen camped on the front porch. And if you could have taught them something on this, could have said, look, the operative line there is front porch. You see, they may have policemen on the front porch, but they've at least got a front porch. So they got porches. So then they can have a variety of porches. And A equals A equals A. So he has identification. He's got all porches identified with a porch. If you can introduce differentiation amongst porches on that particular case, therefore and thereby, the person will improve case-wise and will increase his reality and therefore will have a better communication level and will like people better. Too much. There we're asking somebody to work out the solution to a case by mathematical formula, if you want to know it. Now, this planet doesn't have symbolic mathematics. It doesn't understand them. It has nothing to do with them. When they get into symbolic logic, they put words into algebra and call it symbolic logic. Oh, bleh. Mathematics, these mathematicians that go around and scribble X equal to them, thump, blash, poof, and wind up with an A-bomb. It's no wonder they wind up with A-bombs instead of something that will help things, you know. Their mathematics is so terrible. That's a very definite statement straight from me. Mathematics is in kindergarten on this planet. Symbolic mathematics has nothing to do with doing algebra with symbols instead of numbers, the way man thinks it is, if you look it up in the dictionary or the encyclopedia. It is solving a vast number of non-numerical variables by the use of comparisons, similarities, identities, and differences. And you have to be a real whiz-bang because you can't write it down on a sheet of paper. Now, man even goes so far as to say geometry is logic. There would be nothing sillier than a fellow who went around all the time using syllogisms. A equals B, B equals C, C equals D. Well, all right, that syllogism might possibly work. It's obvious that B and C being the same, why A and D would be the same. And that works out fine as long as you're using only one apple. There's where mathematics falls down. Because it applies the suppressive generality of a number to the specific entity which is being calculated. 2 plus 2, I know that sounded very esoteric. But it's very simple. 2 plus 2 equals 4. It hasn't, it doesn't, and it never will. To what? Now, if you say there is a theoretical formula which has no basis in reality called addition of twos, you would have pronounced the truth. But they teach a little kid 2 plus 2 equals 4, and we mean any 2 plus any 2 equals any 4. Oh, no. 2 girls plus 2 boys equals 4 orchestra members. The instantly you answer the question, what, in an inspecific way, you have insanity. So man is no higher up than an insane mathematic, so don't blame me too much for never having worked anything out. 0 is the wildest variable that anybody ever had anything to do with. Because it's simply on the basis of 0 what? No what? That's the elementary question. Well, a fellow says, 0, 0, of course, 0. You say, yeah, you idiot, what? What? 0 of what? And he says, 0 of nothing. Well, you say, in what interesting universe is this zero of nothing? You locate it or not locate it. He can't tell you zero of what. So every time they accidentally enter zero into a mathematical formula, they get any kind of an answer you can name, and that is nuclear physics, the mathematics thereof, which they use today. And to this day, they don't know when one of those confounded things is going to explode. They run their power plants by tickling the tiger's tail. They figure it all out. Then they throw that in the wastebasket, and they walk into the laboratory, and they very carefully do it empirically by experiment. They can make an accurate guess because their formulas now have enough bugger factors in them to represent, that's what they call them, to represent what they have actually found out empirically. So they jostle these things around. So they have entered mathematics and experience close together. So therefore, they can now make an estimate of what might happen, but they never follow it. That's what's interesting. They never follow it. The guy goes in, and he takes the long rod in his hot papa suit with a big lead wall in front of him, and he takes the long rod, and he adjusts and adjusts, and he uses a little micrometer screw of adjustment to find out just how close you can get piece of plutonium A next to piece of plutonium B and to get a current rather than a bang. Now, he knows as the counter starts going, he's too close, so he backs it off. He didn't figure it out in mathematics at all. And they make my belly tired. They're a bunch of fakes. Somebody can say, listen, who's talking? Yes, sir, listen to who's talking, man. They've never accomplished anything. We have. Now, the main point I'm making here is that logic is done by you. And there are various hints that you can have to wind up with a logic. There are various hints you can have. But in the final analysis, it depends on you and your concept of reality. And mathematics is actually a very low-grade expression of A, R, and C. Now, A, R, and C combined add up to understanding. To understand anything, you have to have A, infinity, R, reality, be able to communicate with it, C, communication. A, R, C, infinity, reality, communication are always necessary to understanding, and oddly enough, R, understanding. As far as mathematics are concerned, that's understanding. But what is doing the understanding? You are. So if a mathematician says there is no such thing as a living being, and he doesn't exist, he is instantly dropped out of his mathematics. What is using the mathematics? What asks the question and receives the answer, so he then doesn't have a mathematics. So in actual fact, mathematics cannot exist without live interpretation. Now, the mathematicians are all that silly. He says you could come along here and you could figure out a robot. You could figure out a robot. And this robot would operate on syllogisms. You know what I mean by syllogism, Aristotelian syllogism. A, you know, if monkeys are like donkeys, why then monkeys' heads are like donkeys' heads, or something like this. You see, if two things are similar to each other, then two other things that they're similar to are also similar to each other. You can take in geometry, you know, side, angle, side, and all that sort of thing. Syllogism, invented by Aristotle in a more vicious moment of his career. People will actually, you open up most geometry textbooks that are taught in the high schools of the United States, and they say, this is logic. Brother, it has nothing to do with logic. It has to do with syllogisms. It was what one thinking being, Aristotle, laid out as a method. So the final ask of the question and receipt of the answer is by being. You can talk about UNIVACs, ENIACs, They can work on the most weird whirring wheels. They're all very clever. They're all marvelous. I'm not running them down. They're a lot of fun. But notice that something had to give it the question and something had to receive the answer. Now, it could have been the most idle action in the world or it could have been used for it. But there is an interpreter. Mathematics does not exist independent of living thought. So therefore, mathematics could be simply defined as a method of memory used by a living being to make inanimate objects or other things appear to think or appear to act. You follow? Now, it's very handy not to have to count the number of bricks in a side wall, but only have to count the number of bricks along the top and the number of bricks up one side and multiply the two together and have the number of bricks in that entire wall. That's great. Very proper use for mathematics. And that's almost as far as it goes. It doesn't go much further than that. You can tell how many square feet of ground. You can tell how high is a cat by measuring them and multiplying and averaging cats, and you can do all sorts of interesting things, but remember, it is always you who are asking the question and you who receive the answer. Now, anytime you escape that proposition, you immediately have permitted yourself to be overwhelmed by methodology. Now, you will be as good logically as you are clear. And you will be able to be cause over the whole thing as much as you are OT. Because the more livingness you can exert or employ on any given subject, by the more logical you can be about it. In fact, you run up to a point where you don't any longer need mathematics. Now, one of the things which has been baffling about Dianetics and Scientology is, how did he figure all this out? I can give you a whole lot of formulas. There were a lot of formulas and things used and so on. They find them in such early literature as Dianetics, Evolution, and a Science. There are a lot of little rules of thumb which have been used. Those are shortcuts and so on. But I haven't been at this for 2 minutes, you know. This is an old line. I'm very familiar with it. Now, it's a simple matter. It's a simple matter of A, R, and C. Very simple, because it's a matter of potential understanding. Now, the A, affinity, you can't stand back and hate men and then find out any reality about men. You can't have a total unreality about men sitting in some ivory tower someplace. You know, never go out, never meet anybody, never talk to anybody, never get mixed up with pickpockets, you know. Give all bandits a wide berth. Never talk to headhunters. Now, you can't go about it that way and have a reality on man. It's impossible. And communication, well, you can't go about it being careful of what you say and careful of what you hear. Anybody who is easily offended had better never go into the business of understanding, because he winds up only with prejudice. He's so offended by what he hears that, of course, he can understand nothing. That, of course, explains in a nutshell somebody who's terribly offended by Scientology. He's so offended by what he hears, he can't understand anything in the first place. The whole thing is, his C is madly out. He can't read, he can't interpret, he can't duplicate. The whole formula, you see, would be out. Now, these are the adjuncts of life and livingness. And the first thing you have to do to tackle any subject like this is to be alive. not dead or disciplined or approved of. If you work to be approved of all the time, you would wind up approved of. The most approved of thing I've seen around, the only time I see WOGS really en masse as a common denominator, gather around and go into affinity and so forth, when somebody's dead. As far as I can tell, the most approved of thing in the society is something very dead. I know the two crimes you can commit in this society is you can be there and you can communicate. Those are the two basic crimes. You notice the police say he had an alibi, so he didn't do it. Well, they proved that he wasn't there, so of course he wasn't guilty. Be there and communicate. Now, therefore, the basis of all Scientology and Dianetic research has been understanding. Somebody tries to look for some peculiar way in which this was done, you see. They're liable to run into the answer of nothing. There's no such answer there. It's just done because of comprehension. Association with man, communication with him, communication with life, reality on existence, what is it, what isn't it, and so on. And not any vast feeling of terrific fear, mustn't hear that and mustn't say something else. We sometimes get victimized by it. I've said something I have found. There was no particular reason to withhold it. The only thing that I withhold on any of these lines is simply when I found something that is on the upper road that's going to make a WOG awfully sick and maybe put him in the hospital, while I don't really care to release that generally to psychiatrists and to people in general. I don't want to see other people ill. So when you look over this general situation, it was done by awareness, by so on, but awareness is proportional to how alive you are. Now, I'm not trying to say I'm more alive than others. I just am. Now, well, all of this, of course, is not apropos to me, but is apropos to you in trying to estimate auditing in cases. The clearer you are, the easier it is to do. And the reason for that is it's not done by any other than the most fundamental laws. And the most fundamental law in the whole field is A, R, and C, and this comprises understanding. But, of course, you must be capable of understanding before you can start to extrapolate or figure out or develop things to do with somebody which depart from a very standardized procedure. When you run into somebody who won't go grade zero release and who can't be rehabilitated on grade zero release, even though you rack up the past lives and everything else trying to find out where he went grade zero release, you can't find that. You must conclude that you have a problem here where that reality must be approached rather than communication, and even sometimes where it must be approached through affinity. And affinity is lower than reality in its reach down. It can exceed reality. That sounds very peculiar, and I have no reason for saying that except the fact that I have had insane people who had such a dim reality that it was almost impossible, and had a terrible reality on me, yet feel enough affection to, because I asked them to, go sane. Yeah, you'd say that required communication. Well, it was the tiniest fragment of communication anybody ever heard of. But I've actually seen it undercut a question concerning reality. So that these are the three pins on which you adjust any auditing session. And all auditing sessions go by gradients. And there actually isn't really much more to it than that. If you there are a great many things, perfectly true and so forth. I'm talking now about the estimate of what you do, the estimate of what you select to do. If you are confronted with such a problem, then that problem has to be resolved in the zone of affinity, reality, and communication. Well, auditing is pretty well wrapped up. You don't have to worry too much about auditing. You're not really going to be called upon to operate on psychotic patients. The number of people that you will find who will not resolve by a little very low-level Dianetic auditing, if they can't get up communication release, are so few as to be non-existent. Because you can get down below that reality on an unconscious person, you know, just making him feel the bed or the pavement, something. He isn't even aware. You're not even aware of the command. You just keep touching his hand, gently giving him a command, touching at the pavement. He'd come out of it. Now, rather, you don't need any particular reason in application of technology to depart one iota from what you already have laid out. As a matter of fact, as you get into the upper grades, it becomes more and more serious to depart from it because the mind happens to be put together in a certain precise way. And it's been figured out as to how it is, so why bother figuring it out? But how about this whole zone and area called life? How about the whole zone and area of interpersonal relations? How about the zone between yourself or the organization and the world around you? Well, now we have the problems of gradient, and we have the problems of affinity, reality, and communication, and that's the problems. We have the problem of interfamilial relations. Well, there are two ways to solve interfamilial relations. The first and most effective way of solving it is by individual processing, to bring the people up to the point where they can understand each other. that it doesn't even process them on the idea of being a family or on their family problems. You just process them just on the gradients and don't give it any particular attention, anything except standard processing. And you will get there, and that's the best way to approach it. It is so senior to education that I don't think I would ever give any family members advice. Ethics is there to force them, not to advise them. When they can't solve it, why, you say, solve it. Or off with your head, you know. A person can't make any progress at all, why, you can give them a hard shove in that direction. But the other way to solve that problem, or figure out what could be done about it, would be in the zone of affinity, reality, and communication. But of course, you're limited if you haven't anybody present to understand. Understanding is composed of affinity, reality, and communication. If their affinity is low and their reality is low and the communication is non-existent, they're not going to understand. So if they don't understand, they're not going to do it. And that's why education is unbeneficial to solve these very, very rough problems. In handling a problem between the organization, the society around us, we keep desperately looking, or as an auditor and his environment and so on, we keep desperately looking for some marvelous solution. Some marvelous solution where full armed we will spring from the brain of Jove and conquer everything, and there will be peace on earth and goodwill toward men. See? And it's got to be this marvelous solution by which we do something inside the organization, or we say something to the public or something like that. Well, stop straining your brains, because you're dealing with this factor. There is no solution at any time superior to the ability of the person asking for it to understand. There is no mathematics that could possibly work any such thing out. I don't say that mathematics shouldn't work things out, and you shouldn't do things with mathematics. I get a lot of fun out of figuring how much would the propeller have to be pitched in order to make the boat go at 8 knots with 161 horsepower. I think that's great. That's great. And after I've worked it all out, I usually guess at it more accurately. But I use mathematics. And I'm not in a position, you know, of somebody who hasn't studied his mathematics. I've studied them all. I almost got expelled one time for finding a use for a dead mathematics. That was one of the wilder experiences I've ever had. It so enraged that professor, he almost turned purple and pink. It was horrible. It was a dead mathematics, which was totally useless, and I found a use for it. And I went up and I told him very proudly and showed him there was a use for it in aerial navigation. He almost blew his gasket. He flunked me at the end of the year, and I had to go to the chair of mathematics and take an examination in that mathematics that covered every tiny theorem in it. You know, one of those dishes. I got 99 on it. And this guy practically ruined his teaching career. He had to pass me. But I had found a use for a mathematics, which was a classical genius thing, you know, a classical little thing for which there was no use. So mathematics, we know, is sacred. But I've studied this subject, and I don't find it sacred. I find that mathematics is as good as it can be employed with understanding. It's as good as the understanding of who asks and who receives the answer. And that's as good as mathematics is. And the answer to becoming better at mathematics has become clearer. The answer to any problem is to become more alive and more capable of understanding. That is the answer which pays off. Now, Scientology is a way. It is a road. There's a standard way of getting there. People do get there on that standard way, and there isn't much you have to figure out about it today. But it is a way toward greater understanding. This world today is not expressing very much affinity or very much reality. And I think it says this reality on communication is so faint to make it no communication at all. Does, das, diz. The soap of the future. What they are using their communication media for? Death. The newspaper, for instance. They call it news. Why, if a woman were to act like that in a village of 200 years ago, they would have put her in the stocks for 6 months for a vicious, malicious gossip. Never has anything good to say about anything or anybody, and that is the modern newspaper, and that is communication in this society. All you had to do is read a few stories about yourself to know how the stories on both columns, besides the one about you, are totally felonious. Not even erroneous, felonious. That wrong. You can absolutely count that if President Johnson is reported as having gone to Warm Springs and so forth, that he is out at the spaceport in Keokuk. You know, you can count on it. I just never did see quite as many errors made per pica of type as can be made in a modern newspaper. It's gorgeous, and yet the public thinks it's informed about things. You say, well, there's some tendency and so forth. Yes, you become aware of the fact that there's a war going on someplace. They specialize in those things. But I'll tell you, ma'am, that 100,000 babies could have suddenly been rescued from an epidemic and all been made well miraculously overnight, and the newspapers had never even mentioned it. Too high-toned. So the communication of the society is poor. Reality is poor. Affinity is very poor. Anytime a world can be subject to wars, you know very well that the affinity is rather poor. So how do you do all this? Well, you process them. We say, well, how can you get them all to stand still to process them? Well, now you're getting into OT stuff. Because you sail very easily outside the understanding and reality of beings. At long about six, you are actually departing from the zone of comprehension of the normal human being. It's about grade six. It isn't even... It isn't even as high as clear, it's just low. But that, I would say, would be a very, very high estimate. It's maybe even at grade zero. But you, for sure, I just know for sure, you're right outside the normal reality at grade six, much less clear. And you go around trying to talk to these people and educate them with data from grade six, and you are going to fall flat on your face. And I'm sure many of you have done it. So what can you do from grade six? If you can't feed them all data about you've all lived before and you're this and that and they haven't got any of the reality on any of this and they're wogged around, you know, they've come out of the night and they've seen you for a moment and sort of looked at you and thought there might be something there, you know, and then you told them a whole bunch of data and drove them back into the night again. After that cycle has been executed, you should sit down and think for a moment and say, wait a minute, is there something I can do from this point that would influence these people or give them better lives or bring them up the line? And the answer is yes. Yes. There's affinity, reality, and communication adding up to understanding. And it's not even difficult. You see, it's essentially a terribly simple answer. You might say, just be. But that has value. If you're a high state of release and you simply are, you would just be surprised how much value that has in your immediate area. You don't have to hang up advertising signs or sandwich boards on you. People see this rather easily. So what can you do? Well, affinity. You can feel an affinity. You can have a reality on what's going on. Don't kid yourself. You see, don't let your affinity overwhelm your reality. See, you don't say, I've got to feel good toward man, so I must not see all of the evil things he does. No, feel good toward him and see the evil things he does. Very elementary. And as far as communication is concerned, just never allow him the luxury of cutting you back from communicating. And you've done it. Because out of that combination will come an understanding, and you will understand what he is all about. Understanding is a sort of a total solvent. It's the universal solvent. It washes away everything. So you see, you actually are not in a position as you go up in the line to educationally reform the society in which you find yourself. You actually err when you tell them any more than, well, we commit these errors, but tell them any more than they need in order to know that there is a way there, that there is a way they can travel, and there is a road out. Now that becomes possible. There is a way. Now, when you communicate to them more than that, you simply so bedazzle their understanding and they've gone blind over the whole thing. Because you actually are deficient in understanding what they can understand. So the final analysis of what can an organization do in the society around, the most fundamental and basic thing that it can do, is found in the triangle of affinity, reality, and communication. It can have a reality on the world around it. It can have an affinity that will not be alloyed or destroyed because of various acts of man. And it must continue to communicate. But communication, remember, is always within the reality of the person who can hear it. Now, it is perfectly true that there exists strata so far above the reality of man and so demonstrable, actually directly to him, he couldn't miss seeing a wall fall down, don't you see? Or a bowl of fruit move through the air. He couldn't miss this, you know. It would baffle him. Now you run into the possibility of throwing him into awe, worship, religious frenzy, because you've now overwhelmed him. And so he assigns his reality as some wild assignment, and he goes to pieces under it. This has happened many times in the past. So if you take that line, you have to be extremely careful not to throw him into a frothing fit, because actually, instead of leading him toward greater understanding, you have depressed him into a total unreality. So how do you handle man and handle a situation? Well, to stand there in a body which is vulnerable to bullets, to have an identity which can be advertised or flaunted, to, in various ways, go on being intensely vulnerable, you can check the degree that you can afford to be understanding or to comprehend the situation around. Now, it's all right to be so understanding. You can see why this guy just got through hooking the beans. But the truth of the matter is as long as you have anything to protect, you must, of course, at the same time, while understanding that he's why he hooks the beans and that he is hooking the beans, you also have to prevent him from doing so. So the net solution to the problem is that you're limited to the degree that you are vulnerable. But you become less and less vulnerable the more and more you're capable of understanding. Now, of course, vulnerability ceases at the moment when you can't be personally injured, but then that is simply a state of case. You have gotten up to this state of case. Now, what I'm talking to you about might sound like it's very old and you've heard it all before and so on, but you actually at this time are facing a crisis in Scientology. It is right around the corner. It is just over the tip of the hill. And the crossroads is simply, do we get so tired of them, we just overwhelm them. Or do we stay true to our own beliefs and continuing to suffer the slings and arrows which are thrown at us, still go on in a high state of ARC? This is a very interesting proposition. Now, of course, there is no arguing with it. The greatest good for the greatest number of dynamics is the optimum solution. And we won't do anything to people who haven't been served with a suppressive order. Anyhow. But this is a time in the history of Dianetics and Scientology when this question begins to stir. What are we going to do with the planet? Not how are we going to fight down a newspaper proprietor. You notice these governments lose. They lose. The questions are not how are we going to prevent bad press any more than it's how are we going to cure all the insane people in the society simultaneously by dropping a pellet in the water supply system or some other idiotic thing, see? That's not the question. The question is, what are we going to do? There are various things which we can do. And we're on a very gingery point here. We're on a point where we could go wrong and a point where we could go right. Because at this particular time, our power exceeds our understanding. Now, it won't exceed it very much or very far. But the reason it does this is very simple. It isn't that people are going to do a lot of things bad. When you're trying to keep a bridge open and you're trying to keep a way open for a lot of people, and those people are still vulnerable and can be attacked and so on, you tend to take protective measures, or you tend to plan protective measures or worry about this type of thing. If it were just yourself, the answer would be very easy. Okay. So it comes up to a question. And there is no mathematics under the sun that will solve it, except those which are inherent in the development of Scientology. And those that are inherent in the development of Scientology, of course, are such things as A, R, and C add up to understanding. They're various axioms, they're various data. So we are at this interesting point in our history. is, what are we going to do with the planet? Because the last thing in the world I want is any more administration. I'm awful tired of administration. There's nobody going to get me in on administration. So nobody wants the planet. But a hurricane is in actual fact a soft summer wind compared to the amount of power which is now becoming available in Scientology. The direction of that power, its utilization, and so on, will inevitably work out for the greatest good of the greatest number of dynamics. This is inevitable. The main question, then, is how does it work out with a minimum number of casualties? But we are right at that point of the road which all of you, at one time or another, have sensed. What are we going to do if? What are we going to do when? Well, we're at that point of the road, and I don't pretend at this particular moment to have any answer to it. There's no figured out answer to it at all. In the first place, I'm too far out of ARC with Victoria State. Joke. But we are in the interesting position today, the interesting position today, of having been yapped at, shouted at, booted around, attacked, reviled, ridiculed, and so forth, and holding in the palm of our hand the answer to all the tomorrows this planet will ever have. It's one of the most fantastic situations that anybody ever heard of. Man is sitting out there without the faintest inkling or maybe he does have or he, and that's why he's screaming. But the main point of all of this is we are at that point where we have clears. They're being achieved. People are moving forward up to OT. The more a person develops, his understanding increases. His affinity, reality, sense of reality, and his communication ability increase. The amount this can be increased is almost infinite. Now, we have the answer in that. But our understanding itself will, of course, pilot the way and all that sort of thing. We can logicize ourselves into a somnolence about this whole thing. But we're at a crossroads. And at this particular crossroads, I don't have any really ready answer. No canned answer to suddenly get you and give you on a silver platter of exactly what we are going to do. I have already explored various lines and so on for the eventual salvage of Scientology in the event of an international cataclysm before we really got there. I went out, I've been working on that for about 6 months, and I got that pretty well taped. Scientology won't perish because of some convulsion in the Northern Hemisphere. And our processing and so on is moving up along the line. Our results are fabulous. It's a 1-2-3 proposition today. And sitting there auditing the pre-clear up through the grades, I suppose in every pre-clear you are facing the same question. As his power increases, what do we do? Well, probably his good sense will dictate what is to be done. And our good sense undoubtedly will go on dictating it. I think we have been fantastically forbearing. Now, it is only hope that our reality on the situation doesn't degenerate as a point of connection, don't you see, to a point where it no longer matters what happens to the little guy.
But we, as a group, have achieved an historical point, which probably could go down resoundingly in history. We are governmentally and so forth very unacceptable. And they depend completely and utterly upon our goodwill. It's a fantastic position for any group to be in. Every religious organization of the past, every group of betterment and so forth of the past has flunked this test. I just hope we don't. Thank you very much.